Chapter 14. Forgive me for asking, but are you Hiram Yeager? Fueled by enthusiasm, Pat had made her way through the vast computer network that covered the entire 10th floor of the Numa building. She had heard computer wizards at the University of Pennsylvania talk in awe of the Ocean's Data Center of the National Underwater and Marine Agency. It was an established fact that the center processed and stored the most enormous amount of digital data on oceanography ever assembled under one roof. The scruffy-looking man, sitting at a horseshoe-shaped console, pulled down his granny glasses and peered at the woman standing in the doorway of his sanctum sanctorum.
"I'm Yeager. You must be Dr. O'Connell. The Admiral said to expect you this morning."
The brain behind this incredible display of information-gathering power hardly fit the image she had of him. For some reason, Pat had expected Yeager to look like a cross between Bill Gates and Albert Einstein. He resembled neither. He was dressed in Levi's pants and jacket over a pure white T-shirt. His feet were encased in cowboy boots that looked as if they had suffered through 1,000 calf-roping contests on the rodeo circuit. His hair was dark gray and long and tied back in a ponytail. His face was boyish, clean-shaven, and featured a narrow nose and gray eyes. Pat would have also been surprised to learn that Yeager lived in a fashionable residential section of Maryland, was married to a successful animal artist, and was the father of two teenage daughters who attended an expensive private school. His only hobby was collecting and restoring old, obsolete computers.
"I hope I'm not interrupting anything," said Pat.
"Weren't you met at the elevator and shown to my domain?"
"No, I simply wandered around until I saw somebody who didn't look like Dilbert."
Yeager, a fan of the comic strip character by Scott Adams, laughed.
"I think I'm supposed to take that as a compliment. I deeply apologize for not having someone meet and escort you."
"No bother. I took a self-guided tour. Your data empire is quite grand. Certainly nothing like the equipment I'm used to working with at the university."
"Can I get you a cup of coffee?"
"No, thank you. I'm fine," said Pat.
"Shall we get to work?"
"As you wish," Yeager replied politely.
"Do you have the photographs taken of the chamber?"
"The photo processing lab sent them up last night. I stayed late and scanned them into Max."
"Dirk told me about Max. I'm anxious to see him in action."
Yeager pulled up a chair next to his, but didn't immediately offer it to Pat.
"If you'll step around the console and stand in the middle of that open platform just in front of us, I'll demonstrate Max's unique talents."
Pat walked to the platform and stood in the center, staring back at Yeager. As she watched, the computer whiz seemed to blur before her eyes and then vanished altogether, as she found herself surrounded by what her mind swore was some kind of nebulous enclosure. Then the walls and ceiling became more distinct, and she found herself standing in an exact replica of the chamber. She had to tell herself that it was a holographic illusion, but it seemed so real, especially when the inscriptions began forming on the walls in well-defined clarity.
"This is fantastic," she murmured.
"Max has all the symbols from the photographs programmed into his memory, but although we have a monitor the size of a small movie screen, I thought it would be helpful for you to read the inscription lines in their original perspective."
"Yes, yes," Pat said, becoming excited. "Being able to study the entire text in one sweep will help enormously. Thank you, and thank Max."
"Come back and meet Max," came Yeager's voice from behind the illusionary chamber. "Then we'll get to work."
Pat was on the verge of saying, "I can't," because the chamber seemed so real. But she broke the illusion by stepping through the wall as if she were a ghost, and rejoined Yeager behind the console.
"Max," said Yeager, "meet Dr. Pat O'Connell,
How do you do?
Came a soft, feminine voice. Pat eyed Yeager suspiciously.
Max is a woman.
I programmed my own voice into the original program, but I've made any number of modifications since then and decided that I'd rather listen to a female voice than that of a male.
She's voice activated.
Yeager smiled. Max is an artificial intelligence system. No buttons to push. Just talk to her like you would a normal person.
Pat looked around. Is there a microphone?
Six, but they're miniatures you can't see. You can stand anywhere within 20 feet. Apprehensively, Pat said,
Max?
On the huge monitor just beyond the platform, the face of a woman appeared. She stared at Pat in vivid color. Her eyes were topaz brown, and her hair a shiny auburn. Her lips were spread in a smile that revealed even white teeth. Her shoulders were bare down to the tops of her breasts, which just showed above the bottom of the monitor.
Hello, Dr. O'Connell. I'm pleased to meet you.
Please call me Pat.
I shall from now on.
She's lovely, said Pat admiringly.
Thank you.
Yeager smiled. Her real name is Elsie, and she's my wife.
Do you work well together? Pat asked facetiously.
Most of the time. But if I'm not careful, she can get as testy and petulant as the original.
Okay, here goes, Pat murmured under her breath.
Max, have you analyzed the symbols that were scanned into your system?
I have.
Max's voice answered in tones that sounded positively human. Could you decipher and translate any of the symbols into the English alphabet?
I've only scratched the surface, but I have made progress. The inscriptions on the ceiling of the chamber appear to be a star chart.
Explain, Yeager ordered.
I see it as a sophisticated coordinate system that is used in astronomy to plot the positions of celestial objects in the sky. I think it might suggest changes in the declinations of stars visible in the sky over a particular part of the world in past epochs.
Meaning that because of deviations in the Earth's rotation, the stars appear to shift positions over time.
Yes, the scientific terms are precession and nutation, Max lectured. Because the Earth bulges around the equator from its rotation, the gravitational pull of the Sun and Moon is heaviest around the equator and causes a slight wobble to the Earth's spinning axis. You've seen the same phenomenon in a spinning top, due to gravity. This is called precession, and it traces a circular cone in space every 25,800 years. Nutation, or nodding, is a small but irregular movement that swings the celestial pole 10 seconds away from the smooth precessional circle every 18.6 years.
I know that sometime in the distant future, said Pat, Polaris will no longer be the North Star.
Exactly, Max agreed.
As Polaris drifts away, another star will move into position above the North Pole in approximately 345 years. 100 years before the time of Christ, the vernal equinox. Excuse me, are you familiar with the vernal equinox? If I remember my junior college astronomy, said Pat, the vernal equinox is where the sun intersects the celestial equator from south to north during the spring equinox, making it a reference direction for angular distances as measured from the equator.
Very good, Max complimented her. Spoken like a college professor putting her class to sleep. Anyway, before Christ, the vernal equinox passed through the constellation Aries. Because of precession, the vernal equinox is now in Pisces and is advancing toward Aquarius.
What I think you're telling us, said Pat, elation beginning to grow in her chest, is that the star-like symbols in the ceiling and the chamber display coordinates of the star system from the past.
That's how I read it, Max said impassively.
Did the ancients have the scientific knowledge to make such accurate projections?
I'm finding that whoever carved that celestial map in the ceiling of the chamber was superior to the astronomers of only a few hundred years ago. They calculated correctly that the celestial galaxy is fixed, and that the sun, the moon, and the planets revolve. The map shows the orbits of the planets, including Pluto, which was discovered only in the last century. They discovered that the stars Betelgeuse, Sirius, and Procyon remain in permanent positions, while other constellations move imperceptibly over thousands of years. Believe me, these ancient people knew their stuff when it came to stargazing.
Pat looked at Jaeger.
If Max can decipher the star coordinates as engraved in the chamber when it was built, we might be able to date its construction.
It's worth a try.
I deciphered a small part of the numbering system, said Pat. Would that help you, Max?
You shouldn't have bothered.
I have already interpreted the numbering system. I find it quite ingenious for its simplicity. I can't wait to dig my bites into the inscriptions that spell out words.
Max?
Yes, Hiram?
Concentrate on deciphering the star symbols and put aside the alphabetic inscriptions for now.
You'd like me to analyze the celestial map?
Do the best you can.
Can you give me until 5 o'clock? I should be able to get a handle on it by then.
The time is yours, Jaeger responded.
Max only requires a few hours for a project that should take months, even years? Pat asked incredulously.
Never underestimate Max, said Jaeger, swinging around in his chair and sipping from a cup of cold coffee. I spent the better part of my prime years putting Max together. There isn't another computer system like her in the world. Not that she won't be obsolete in 5 years. But for the present, there is very little she can't do. She is unique, and she belongs heart and soul to me and Numa.
What about patents? Surely you must turn your rights over to the government.
Admiral Sandecker is not your average bureaucrat. We have a verbal contract. I trust him, and he trusts me. 50% of any revenue that we make on patent royalties or charges for the use of our accumulated data to private corporations or government agencies is turned over to Numa. The other 50% comes to me.
You certainly work for a fair-minded man. Any other employer would have given you a bonus, a gold watch, and a pat on the back and taken your profits to the bank.
I'm lucky to be surrounded by fair-minded men, said Jaeger solemnly. The Admiral, Rudy Gunn, Al Giordino, and Dirk Pitt. They're all men I'm proud to call my friends.
You've known them for a long time.
Close to 15 years. We've had some wild times together and solved any number of ocean riddles.
While we're waiting for Max to get back to us, why don't we begin analyzing the wall symbols? Perhaps we can find a clue to their meaning.
Jaeger nodded. Sure thing.
Can you reproduce the holographic image of the chamber?
Wishing will make it so, Jaeger said, as he typed a command at his keyboard, and the image of the interior walls of the chamber materialized again.
To decipher an unknown alphabetic writing, the first trick is to separate the consonants from the vowels. Since I see no indication that they represent ideas or objects, I'm assuming that the symbols are alphabetic and they record sounds of words.
What is the origin of the first alphabet? Asked Jaeger.
Hard evidence is scarce, but most epigraphists believe it was invented in ancient Canaan and Phoenicia, somewhere between 1700 and 1500 BC, and is labeled as North Semitic. Leading scholars disagree, of course, but they do tend to agree that early Mediterranean cultures developed the awakenings of an alphabet from prehistoric geometric symbols. Much later, the Greeks adapted and refined the alphabet, so the letters we write today are related. Further developments came from the Etruscans, followed by the Romans,
who borrowed heavily to form the written language of Latin, and whose later classic characters eventually formed the 26-letter alphabet you and I use today. Where do we begin?
We'll be starting from scratch, said Pat, referring to her notes. I'm unaware of any other ancient writing systems whose symbols match those inscribed in the chamber. There seems to be no influence either way, which is most unusual. The only remote similarity is to the Celtic Agam alphabet. But there, any resemblance ends.
I almost forgot. Jaeger handed her a small baton-like shaft with a miniature camera at one end. Max has already coded the symbols. If you want me to help you from my end with any calculations, just aim the camera at the symbol and its sequence in the inscriptions you wish to study, and I'll work at developing a decipher program.
Sounds good, said Pat, happy to be back in the harness again. First, let's list the different symbols and get a count on how many times each is represented. Then we can try working them into words.
Like the and.
Most of the ancient script did not include words we take for granted today. I also want to see if we can detect the vowels before tackling the consonants.
They worked through the day without a break. At noon, Jaeger sent down word to the Numa cafeteria to send up sandwiches and soft drinks. Pat was becoming increasingly frustrated. The symbols looked maddeningly simple to decipher, and yet, by 5 o'clock, she had had little or no success in untangling their definitions.
Why is it the numbering system was so easy to break, but the alphabet so impossible? She muttered irritably.
Why don't we knock off until tomorrow? Jaeger suggested.
I'm not tired.
Neither am I, he concurred. But we'll have a fresh outlook. I don't know about you, but my best solutions always come to me in the middle of the night. Besides, Max doesn't require sleep. I'll put her on the inscriptions during the night. By morning, she should have some idea on the translation.
I have no sensible argument.
Before we knock off, I'll call up Max and see if she's made any progress with the stars. Jaeger's fingers didn't have to play over the keyboard. He simply pressed a transmit button and said, Max, are you there? Her scowling face came over the monitor.
What took you and Dr. O'Connell so long to get back to me? I've been waiting for nearly 2 hours.
Sorry, Max, said Jaeger, without a deep sense of regret. We were busy.
You didn't spend but a few hours on the project, said Pat naively. Did you strike out?
Strike out, hell, Max snapped. I can tell you exactly what you want to know.
Start with how you came to your conclusions, Jaeger commanded.
You didn't think I was going to calculate movement of the stars myself, did you?
It was your project.
Why should I strain my chips when I can get another computer to do it?
Please, Max, tell us what you've discovered.
Well, first of all, finding the coordinates of celestial objects in the sky takes a complicated geometric process. I won't get into boring detail on how to determine the altitude, azimuth, right ascension, and declination. My problem was to determine the sites where the coordinates engraved in the rock of the chamber were measured. I managed to calculate the original sites where the observers took their sightings within a few miles. Also, the stars they used to measure deviations over many, many years. The 3 stars in the belt of the constellation of Orion, the Hunter, all move. Sirius, the dog star, who sits near the heel of Orion, is fixed. With these numbers in hand, I tapped into the astronomy computer over at the National Science Center.
Shame on you, Max, admonished Jaeger. You could get me into big trouble raiding another computer network.
I think the computer over at NSC likes me. He promised to erase my inquiry.
I hope you can take him at his word, grunted Jaeger. It was an act. Jaeger had tapped into outside computer networks for unauthorized data hundreds of times.
Astrometry, Max continued unperturbed, in case you don't know, is one of the oldest branches of astronomy,
and deals with determining the movements of stars. Max paused. Follow me?
Go on, Pat urged.
The guy in the computer over at NSC isn't up to my standards, of course. But since this was an elementary program for him, I sweet-talked him into working out the deviation between positions of Sirius and Orion when the chamber was built, with their present coordinates in the sky.
You dated the chamber, Pat murmured, holding her breath.
I did. Is the chamber a hoax? Yeager asked, as if afraid of the answer. Not unless those old Hard Rock Colorado miners you're worried about were first-class astronomers.
Please, Max, Pat begged. When was the chamber built and the inscriptions engraved on its walls?
You must remember, my time estimate is give or take 100 years.
It's older than 100 years?
Would you believe, Max said slowly, dragging out the suspense, a figure of 9,000?
What are you saying?
I'm saying your chamber was chiseled out of the Colorado Rock sometime around 7100 B.C.